Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc. I heard this morning, and I don't know. While Bush is replacing people, he might consider replacing his press secretary. This is just my opinion. Please don't get angry with me. But this is the second time I have run across the daily press briefing wherein Scott McClellan was asked a simple question on a very important issue. More important than Iraq, more important than who's going to be the next Secretary of State, more important than many of the issues he's usually asked about during his press briefing every day at the White House, having to do with Roe v. Wade and the president's position on it. And this is the second time I've run across him. Well, the first time he just stamped the question out like it were a, a bumblebee. Boom. It was. He didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to answer it. And that was on the question of whether or not President Bush believes that Muslims and Christians worship the same God, and whether or not, remember when it was rumored that Yasser Arafat had died and the president said, God bless his soul? And then the question was asked in the press briefing, what did the president, is the president a universalist? Does he believe that Arafat, ergo Muslims, go to heaven? And McClellan said, I don't need to clarify what the president said. President made it clear, I don't need to clarify it. He didn't answer the question. Well, this was Monday's press briefing. Scott McClellan again. Same reporter, by the way, as far as I can tell from the voice. And the question is about Roe v. Wade. We're going to be hearing this audio here. I'd like your reaction to it. Open lines, issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. While people are practically dancing around the bonfire with pitchforks about Arlen Specter, one might ask, and Spector's president, what is his? You know, we're worried about whether or not Arlen Specter is elected to be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, and ergo be the one who is going to shepherd prospective federal bench nominees through that all-important process. There's also a question, we'll hear it in just a moment, after we hear a little bit from Pat Mahoney of the Christian Defense Coalition. There's also a question of Specter, too, in this press briefing on Monday at the White House. All right, here's the question from the reporter and Scott McClellan's response. Listen very, very carefully to this interchange.
Judy Brown, the president of the American Life League, stated on November the 4th, quote, the president needs to learn that all abortions are bad, not just partial birth abortions. He could learn there is no reason to excuse abortions in alleged cases of rape, incest, threat to the mother's life, or fetal deformity.
You have a
question, does the president agree with this extraordinary statement in ever having supported the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and if so,
no matter where you stand on the issue of abortion, the president believes that we can all work together to take practical steps to reduce abortion in America. And that's why he's worked to pass a ban on partial birth abortions. That's why he's... why he's worked to streamline the adoption process. And that's why he supports parental notification laws. So there are a number of practical steps that we can take to reduce the number of abortions, and that's what the president is focused on doing.
Question was, has he ever urged or supported the overturning of Roe v. Wade?
He's commented on that previously, and he's talked about that, and he's talked about what we can do now to work together to reduce the number of abortions in America. But he's made his position very well known on that as well.
Go ahead.
He's made his position very well known about.
Yeah,
he's made his position known.
What is the position?
Yes. Well, currently there's not enough support in Congress or. To get it done at this point has been the president's view, but that we should work towards that goal. And in the meantime, because in the meantime, we can work to reduce the number of abortions through a number of practical steps, of which he has pursued.
Okay. It took an awful long time for McClellan to actually say anything definitive here. Now, in case you didn't catch it, what he did say in response to the repeated question, and the question was repeated because the question wasn't being answered, the repeated question does the president support the overturning of Roe v. Wade? Simple question. Not only did Les Kinsolving, who's the WorldNet Daily White House correspondent, have to ask that question three times, Helen Thomas from the back row of Hearst newspapers even had to chime in and ask, what is the president's position? I mean, when you got Helen Thomas pressing for an answer on this question, too, and she is known as kind of the grand dame of the White House press corps and very liberal at that, when she wants to know, does the president want to overturn Roe v. Wade? Well, that's a question McClellan has to answer when Helen Thomas asks. And listen again, this is what he said. He said, currently, there's not enough support in Congress to get that done. That is overturning Roe v. Wade. At this point. And that's been the president's view, but we should work toward that goal. So he did say that the president's view is that we should work toward the goal of overturning Roe v. Wade. Now listen carefully to the next paragraph. And in the meantime, because he supports, in the meantime, we can work to reduce the number of abortions through a number of practical steps, which he has pursued. Scott McClellan would not say that the president supports overturning Roe v. Wade. He almost said it. And then he caught himself. And went back to the talking point of reducing the number of abortions. Now, don't get me wrong, folks. I am all in favor of reducing the number of abortions in the meantime. I think it's a good strategy. I think it's a great strategy. I commend the president for it. I commend the president for all the things that he has supported to reduce the number of abortions. You could reduce them by a lot by overturning Roe v. Wade. And for some reason, and I don't think it's a lack of courage on Scott McClellan's part, for some reason the White House spokesman is not willing to come out and say that the president supports the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And it's not that he didn't have opportunity to say it. He had four opportunities in the course of about 1 minute and 15 seconds. It's open lines, issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Isn't this the question pressing upon everyone at this point? Isn't this the question that lurks behind the Arlen Specter probability for the Judicial Committee of the Senate? Isn't this the question? Why is Arlen Specter even an issue if what's really the question is what Les Kinsolving had to ask? Has the president thought about, has he considered, and has he expressed any desire to see Roe v. Wade overturned? And Scott McClellan stopped short of saying that he would support such a thing. Herman is calling from his car. Herman, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. Don't you think this just makes pointing out that the president wishes to have Roe v. Wade overturned, don't you just think that makes it more difficult for him to get his judicial nominees through Congress, and that's the only reason there's a reticence to come right out and say that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I understand the reasoning there, Herman, but I also got to say, is this any secret? I mean, those who oppose the president's judicial nominees already believe with a martyr's fervor that the president wants to see Roe v. Wade overturned. And I'm asking myself, what does he got to lose if he just comes out and says, yeah, in time, through the right process, if it's the will of the people, we're going to overturn that law that was never any good to begin with. That's what his opponents believe he believes. If it is what he believes, I don't see how he loses anything, really, by just saying, yeah, I'd like to see it overturned. Due process, will of the American people, and sooner or later, hopefully, we'll all see that it's bad law. What do you think?
I don't know. I think it makes it more difficult for the president to make his case that he's not imposing a litmus test for judges, rather simply enforcing or seeing to it that the larger issue is covered, that is, finding judges who simply apply and interpret the law instead of making up the law. And to get a nominee through the Senate, there's going to have to be enormous public pressure and support for the president's nominees. I think probably the more abortion is the centerpiece, the more difficult it is to get over the 50% mark, perhaps.
I don't know. And you're right. And if the Senate goes the way the Senate has gone, it's not going to be 50%. It's going to have to be 60%. I mean, it's kind of the open secret in Washington, D.C., at least if you're listening to the chattering classes, it's the open secret is that the Democrats are in the Senate are planning on filibusters, and they're saving their filibusters, their big ammunition, the big gun of the filibuster, for judicial nominees. Not every one of them, but the ones that really count, and I think you could see that happening in a Supreme Court nomination process. So your point is well taken, although he wants to make his case, and the president has consistently made his case, that he doesn't have a litmus test. I find it a bit frustrating that the other side feels under no obligation to live by that rule. They readily admit, in one form or another, to having a litmus test. Some of them proudly admit that they hold to a litmus test. Only judges that will uphold a woman's right to choose. Boom. Now, I know things aren't fair, but... and correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just expecting too much of any president to come out and say that Roe v. Wade is bad law. I understand the process has got to be followed. I understand that politics is the art of the possible and that it is the fine art of compromise. Am I just a dreamer? That when in a question asked of a pro-life president or a spokesman, would you like to see Roe v. Wade overturned? We can't get a straight answer. We can't get a simple yeah. But the president, here's if I'm Scott McClellan, this is how I answer. Yes, but the president realizes that not everyone agrees with him. He hopes to convince the American people and to see it happen. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Now, religious groups, we'll talk about that in a minute. First, let's talk with Kent, who's calling from his car. Kent.
Hi, Todd.
Hi, Kent.
Hey, I think you're making a rather big assumption here, aren't you?
What's that?
That the president wants Roe v. Wade overturned.
Actually, I'm not making that assumption. That's the whole point.
I've never heard him say that.
Neither have I.
And the rhetoric that, you know, we should work to reduce abortions, et cetera, that could as easily have come from President Clinton.
Right. Safe, legal, and rare.
I think many assume, and you stole a little bit of my thunder, many of those on the left, I mean, he's not going to gain any votes from militant feminists by not taking a bold stand. They already believe the worst in their mind.
The most he does, Kent, is he insulates himself from the charge that he's imposing a litmus test. That's the most he can possibly do. But the people who think he's got a litmus test are going to believe that regardless of what he does.
Right. And that, I mean, he may not have a litmus test. So-called activist judges,
mm-hmm.
and I agree with most on the right about this issue, but Roe is the law of the land. I don't think we should be afraid of a judge who's going to, quote-unquote, strictly interpret the law. The time will come to get it overturned, but that's going to be through Supreme Court action, not a lower court. So, I mean, there's a bit of, quote-unquote, reverse activism in getting someone who is rabidly ready to overturn it. Well, I mean, somebody can nominate me. I'll be happy to do that on the Supreme Court. But I
understand what you're saying, Kent. Thank you very much. And you're right. Plus, if I were a bookie in Vegas, one of the hardest thing to take a bet on would to lay odds on would be, what do Supreme Court justices do after they've been approved by the Senate? You know, the big lib to moderate Supreme Court justices, a couple of them are Reagan appointees. Now, if you ever want to talk about a pro-life president, guy wrote a book against abortion. And would he, if he had it in his power to have gotten something like that pressed through a hostile Congress, we would have no more Roe v. Wade. We would have had legislation against abortion during his tenure with Reagan, and his two, I don't know, maybe I'm miscounting, his appointees, not all of them, many of them turned out not to be friendly to the pro-life cause on the Supreme Court. And he was not ashamed. Look how far we've come, you know? It's not really been that long since we were listening to Ronald Reagan say, Roe's bad law and it should be overturned. And he was simply honest, and he didn't care whether he... Now, Who was it? He didn't appoint Bork, did he? He didn't appoint Bork. That was George W. Bush. That was George Herbert Walker Bush, I think, with Bork. I'd have to ask Bork. There was Reagan saying, overturn Roe. He ran on it. He got people elected on it. He was a dreamer. Maybe that's why he didn't get anything done. I don't know. All right. There's more here. And we'll get back to the press conference of Monday in just a moment. First, there are religious groups that oppose Senator Arlen Specter to be the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And they include pretty much everybody that would be counted as either religious, social, or moral conservative. I have not heard many say, you know, Arlen Specter's A-okay. Let's give this guy a break. Some within talk radio. They were protesting outside the Senate office building yesterday. This is a crucial time to be doing, of course, because meanwhile, Senator Specter was inside the Senate office building talking to his friends in the Senate saying, I think I'd like that job. Well, one of them was the Reverend Patrick Mahoney of the Christian Defense Coalition. He says that the election day turnout gives Christian conservatives a new power.
We are going to be passionate. No longer can the Republican Party turn to us and say, thank you, pro-life, pro-family evangelicals and Catholics for your votes. Now go home and let us legislate. No. We will be heard.
Okay, you'll be heard, but so far, the president hasn't withdrawn any support for Arlen Specter. Has he? I mean, he could say, we're not going to be said thank you for getting us elected, now let us legislate, but so far. Now, it's only been a couple of weeks, but so far, that has been what's happened. Thank you for getting us elected, 22% moral values voters. Now, please, let us get on with the business of doing what you elected us to do, or maybe not. Mahoney also says that Specter's promise not to block any of the president's judicial nominees simply doesn't go far enough.
Senator Specter needs to be passionately and aggressively pushing the agenda, the judicial agenda of President Bush. Even by his own comments and his own words, Senator Specter is not the right person for this job.
Now, remember, while these words are being spoken by Pat Mahoney outside the Senate office building, inside the Senate office building, Specter is making the opposite case that he is the man for the job. Now, if the Senate rules are anything, Senator Specter would be, already, without a question, the chairman of the Judicial Committee. He's got seniority. That's how the Senate works. If it were not for this abortion issue, of course, and judicial nominees. Pat Mahoney says that Christians really did make the difference in the election, and they don't want Specter to head the Judiciary Committee of the Senate.
If Senator Specter becomes head of the judiciary, it is a betrayal and a slap in the face to millions of pro-life Americans who worked to help re-elect this president and get a 55 Republican majority in the Senate.
A betrayal is the word. Those are Pat Mahoney's words. A betrayal. Barring an act of God, Senator Specter will be chairman of the Judicial Committee. So we could probably all start writing betrayal, start spelling it out right now. It's going to happen. What happens next, no one knows. Mahoney says that Christians refuse to be placed on the sideline anymore.
We are empowered. We are energized. We will not go silently back into the night. We are here, and we are making our voice heard loud and clearly.
We'll see whether or not it's effective. I mean, okay, first of all, while I think Pat Mahoney probably is portraying for the press exactly the picture of Christians that they want to put on the nightly news and on the morning news, someone standing on the Senate voice horse demanding payback, demanding, now we got you elected, it's time, you know, the quid pro quo must now cross the barrel head. Come on. I agree with what he has to say. I mean, it is true that, no one in the White House can have any illusions that those who did it to the tune of 22%, who did help the president get elected, were earnest about this whole judicial nomination thing and did not elect the president simply to turn around and hand the judicial nomination to Arlen Specter. Finally, the Reverend Pat Mahoney of the Christian Defense Coalition says that the Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist must decide if he is with pro-lifers or against them.
Senator Frist must decide seniority or principle, seniority or the core of the Republican Party who help elect them. That's what's at stake here.
Okay, that's Pat Mahoney. There he is on the Senate steps. Let's go back to the press conference, if we could, of Monday this week. The question of Senator Specter also came up. It was asked as a follow-up to the previous question we played for you. Here it is. Listen carefully.
One follow-up. Robert Novak notes, no sooner had Specter been nominated than he turned leftward in declaring his independence from Bush, refusing to help two GOP congressional challengers in Pennsylvania who had a chance to win but went down. And my question, since President Bush helped Specter win his very close renomination fight, and since Specter voted against both Judge Bork and against U.S. Senator Sessions, who's on the committee, why does the president believe Specter would be a good judiciary chairman?
Well, Les, you're asking me to comment about a matter that is decided by his fellow colleagues on the United States Senate. That is a matter that they will... Les, that is a matter that they will decide. Go ahead.
Okay, he did not answer the question again, because the question wasn't who decides. Yes, obviously, it's the Senate who decides. It's the committee itself that decides who its chairman is going to be. The president doesn't have an input on this decision, although anyone with half a brain realizes this is the president's decision to make. He can at least send the message down through Frist and say, no, 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 Specter. He has not done that, to anyone's knowledge. But the question wasn't who decides. The question is, what makes the president think that Specter is the best man for the job? He's made enemies on the committee, and he's worked against his own party. He ran against a pro-life Republican. The president went and campaigned for Arlen Specter against a pro-life Republican in that race. Judy Brown pointed that out. And the only answer that Scott McClellan will give is, it's the Senate's decision to make. It's the Senate's. He said, what's the president's stance? Where does he stand on the whole Senate's decision to make? Now, look, if politics is the art of the possible, and we realize that that politics is not always just who decides, but who has the most influence, it's the president is the head of his party. If this were D.D. Meyer in the first Clinton administration, do you remember? If this were D.D. Meyer evading questions like this, conservatives would be in an uproar. They'd be doing handsprings and yelling at the top of their lungs simultaneously. 10 more minutes of open lines for you when we come back from this break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc.
Is it evidence over emotion? Answers with Ken Ham, one of the most in-demand Bible conference speakers now in North America.
Well, Ken, can you tell us something about scientists who have become Christians because of the evidence for creation?
Well, a vast number of scientists fit this category, one of whom is Dr. Jonathan Safady, a research scientist, speaker, and writer at Answers in Genesis. Early in his faith, he was convinced that death and suffering were the result of Adam's sin and that they couldn't have existed before sin. He believed that a literal creation account was the only consistent view of Scripture. And despite having no religious upbringing, Jonathan investigated his Messianic Jewish roots after his conversion at the age of 20. Early in his faith, Jonathan experienced many Christian compromisers who said the creation versus evolution debate was a side issue. But based on logic, he realized that if the Genesis account of sin and death in God's perfect world wasn't real history, then it completely eliminated the very reason why Christ had to come to earth, to save mankind from the penalty of their sins. You see, for Jonathan, becoming a Christian was a result of logical reasoning, not some life crisis or emotional need. He discovered the claims of Christianity to be logical and entirely defensible, and the Bible is true from the very first verse.
The Bible, starting from Genesis, also can help us explain what happened to the dinosaurs. Read Ken Ham's fascinating free booklet on dinosaurs when you go to AnswersRadio.com.
Dr. Dean Winthy, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the future of Concordia Theological Seminary.
I can't believe the blessings that we have been given, as we Lutherans say, not with any merit or worthiness on our part, but by God's grace, He continues to lead talented and dedicated men and women to give their lives to Him and to the truth of the gospel. And I'd like to invite any of your listeners to come and visit us, but more than visit, worship with us, be my guest for a campus tour, and see how our life revolves around this wonderful truth that the incarnate Christ has brought to our world.
For information on the fall retreats at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, call toll-free 1-877-287-4338.
Do you want more of God's grace? Bethany Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights is a Bible-believing church, faithful to the Scriptures, a place for the whole family, a community gathered around Christ that cares with a vibrant historic Christian liturgy. Bethany Lutheran Church is located at 5600 Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights. Visit them at www.bethanylcms.org.
One follow-up. Robert Novak notes, no sooner had Specter been nominated than he turned leftward in declaring his independence from Bush, refusing to help two GOP congressional challengers in Pennsylvania who had a chance to win but went down. And my question, since President Bush helped Specter win his very close renomination fight, and since Specter voted against both Judge Bork and against U.S. Senator Sessions, who's on the committee, why does the president believe Specter would be a good judiciary chairman?
Well, Les, you're asking me to comment about a matter that is decided by his fellow colleagues on the United States Senate. That is a matter that they will... Les, that is a matter that they will decide. Go ahead.
It's open lines, issues, et cetera. You know, I was thinking while I was listening to that again, the president is asked to comment all the time on things that the Senate's deciding. The president says, I'll sign that bill. That's a comment on things that the Senate decides. Just because it's the Senate's decision to make doesn't mean the president, well, I can't have an opinion on that, for heaven's sakes. Well, that would be improper of me to hold an opinion on such a thing. Come on. The president all the time, it's part of his job, the interaction, the balance of power, that he would weigh in, counsel, and advise, and it goes both ways, the legislature on matters that they decide, that he doesn't technically decide. When he says, I'll sign that bill, or he says, actually, this president never says this, I'll veto that bill. That would be a great thing to see happen in this administration, maybe a veto. But if he says, I'll sign it or I'll veto it in advance of the passage of the bill, he's weighing in on something that is technically the Senate's decision to make. By the way, the reporter that was asking the question, both the questions we featured during this last hour of Open Lines, was Les Kinsolving. He's the WorldNet Daily White House correspondent. It's a very conservative, not a liberal organization. This is, if there's ever a publication that's a friend to the president, this one ranks up there with the Washington Times. Okay? And Fox News. In fact, one might even say WorldNet Daily's was Fox News before Fox News was Fox News. It's Open Lines Issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. But if you got a conservative organization, news organization, we really should expect them to hold a conservative president's feet to the fire, too, I think. Am I overreacting to this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Tomorrow on Issues, etc., what straight divorce, heterosexual divorce, has to do with gay marriage. We'll talk about this with Jennifer Roback Morse of the Hoover Institute. We'll also talk with Father Paul Walter. He's formerly of Good Shepherd Episcopal Church, about his battle with the Episcopal Diocese of Missouri. We featured him some time back. And we'll also study the hymns In Thee Is Gladness and Gentle Stranger with Pastor Henry Gehrke tomorrow on Issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. By the way, those two questions that you heard that we separated there by the with those Mahoney cuts, they followed one upon the other. They were both asked. And if you want to read the transcript just for yourself, you can go to WorldNet Daily and look at the feature that they have there on a regular basis. This one's for Monday, November 15th, just so you know I'm not making it up. Monday, November 15th, 2004, the feature is called WND, WorldNet Daily, at the White House, where they include the two questions that their reporter gets if they get a question at each press briefing. They always ask very good questions, too. Les Kensalving does. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And as if out of heaven, there comes this missive from the LA Times. Evangelicals want faith rewarded. Christian leaders fear that influence on Bush, despite wide support, could be short-lived. Matthew Staver, sometime guest here on this program, who heads the conservative Florida-based group called Liberty Council, said that political parties tended to, quote, take for granted those people who put them into office, especially religious and moral conservatives. We want to make sure that that doesn't happen this time, he said. The Reverend Lewis P. Sheldon, he's chairman of Traditional Values Coalition, said if Republican leaders in Congress allow Specter to become chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, what does he say? He says their political futures could be at risk. Now, who's he talking to? He's talking to the members of the Judiciary Committee. He's talking to Bill Frist. He said a Specter chairmanship would be an albatross for Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist of Tennessee, a potential presidential contender. Politics is also the art of the veiled threat and not so veiled threat. Do you want President Bush to take a stand on this issue? Do you want him to take a stand on the Arlen Specter issue and send over the transom or under the transom or telegraph it through the press that he doesn't think Arlen Specter is the best man for the job? Do you think his silence on this issue says something? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The Reverend Jerry Falwell, one of the nation's most prominent evangelists, is also concerned about harnessing the movement's power within the GOP and national politics, that this week he formed this, and I told you about it before, the Faith and Values Coalition. He says it's a 21st century version of the moral majority. The story goes on to say that the polls show that as many as 22% of voters ranked values as the most important motivator in casting their vote. About 80% of those voters supported Bush. They spoke frequently, by the way, in exit polls about their Christian faith. Despite these voters' support for Bush, the White House seems to be treading carefully in its relationship with evangelicals. Karl Rove, the Bush's chief political strategist, told reporters this week that he believes evangelicals deserve much of the credit for Bush's reelection and that the future candidates should heed the lessons of 2004 when it comes to voters opposing same-sex marriage. This is an issue about which there is broad general consensus, Rove said. People would be well advised to pay attention to what the American people are saying. That's gay marriage. They're safe on that issue. The president has come out and said he supports this constitutional amendment. Now, wait a minute. That's not his decision to make. Were you applauding when the president last year said that he would support it? Well, it was this year, earlier this year, said he would support a constitutional amendment to define marriage as a man and a woman. That process hasn't begun, and the president has no part in that process. He doesn't even sign a constitutional amendment. That takes place entirely apart from his administration. He's throwing his moral support behind something that is the decision of 35 states and the House and the Senate. What's going on here? According to Scott McClellan, the president, he doesn't chime in on things he doesn't have decision-making power over. See, a president can say as much through his silence as he can through what he does say. Oh, maybe I'm reading the tea leaves wrong. Maybe the president's silence is intended to say that he doesn't support Spector. I don't know. You know, Ronald Reagan wrote this book on the life issue, and he was very outspoken, not only before he became president, but during the 8 years that he served as president, and briefly afterwards, of course, to where he stood on Roe v. Wade. Now, I had asked the question of my producer before, was he the guy who nominated Bork? He was. Now, Bork went down in flames, you're saying, for various reasons. Although, I don't know that abortion was the biggest reason that he went down in flames. But would that we had a president still, and maybe we will, who will simply be honest about what he thinks about Roe v. Wade. By the way, before we go, coming up January 18th through the 21st on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, they are holding their 2005 Symposia Series, one on the third use of the law, and then following closely thereupon, the other on, who is Jesus, answering this basic question. Great speakers. If you want more information on the 2005 Symposia Series at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, go to our website, issuesetc.org. We'll be broadcasting the 18th through the 21st there at the symposia on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. You'll find a list of speakers, a link to a place where you can register, and you can find out all about it now. By the way, folks, this is one of those kind of things where they draw in 1,000 people easy. And if you want a hotel room in Fort Wayne, it ain't a big town. You got to register now. issuesetc.org under the What's New section. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.